At least 10 major companies have cut ties in recent days with the NRA in the wake of intense scrutiny over the Parkland, Florida school shooting 15 days ago. The latest development, Walmart is following Dick's Sporting Goods lead. The world's largest retailer announced in a press release yesterday that it will raise age restrictions for the purchase of firearms and ammo to 21 starting immediately. But before we get into that conversation, a discussion about the departure of President Trump's longest-serving aide, Hope Hicks, and we'll open it up to your questions along the way this hour, of course. Kevin Wagner is a political science professor at Florida Atlantic University and a research fellow at the university's Business and Economics Polling Initiative. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, we learned yesterday afternoon that the White House Communications Director Hope Hicks is resigning. New York Times said she was one of the few aides who understands President Trump's personality and style and could challenge him to change his views. How big a deal is her departure going to be?
Well, you know, the Trump administration has always been sort of a bit of a family business, even when it was a campaign. And so, the president tends to trust the people that he's had around him for some time. And, of course, she's got a long history with the president. So you've seen actually a pattern of some of these people that have been around the president for a long time just leaving the White House or leaving government. And it makes you wonder who the president will confide in if he doesn't have those people. So it's definitely a changing the guard in the White House, without a doubt.
Her resignation comes a day after she testified for 8 hours before the House Intelligence Committee and said she had occasionally been required to tell white lies, but that she had told the truth regarding the investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Multiple White House officials said her resignation had nothing to do with her appearance before the intelligence panel and that she had told some people several days earlier that she had planned to resign. What do you make of the timing, though, of her exit?
Yeah, a couple of extraordinary things in that question. Generally, you don't get White House officials, let alone the communications director, to suggest that they've been lying, even if they call it white lies on behalf of the president. That's actually pretty extraordinary. One of the interesting things is that, it's not really clear why she left. The reporting is that she intended to leave or that she told people she intended to leave. The truth of the matter is that it's hard to know. The timing is interesting. It's a tough job. It could have been burnout. It could have been concern about legal exposure. It could have been a disagreement with the president. It could have had something to do with Porter. I mean, there's so many things that, that have happened over the last few months that makes you wonder. I suppose we take, people generally at their word when she says she just wanted to leave. But there's a lot of stuff around this that is interesting and can lead to conjecture.
Let's move on to the main reason we invited you to talk with us today. Dick's Sporting Goods announced yesterday that it would no longer sell assault-style weapons and that it would only sell guns to people at least 21. And then later in the day, we learned Walmart also said it would raise the age for buying firearms and ammo to 21. You did some polling on this in Florida. What did you find out?
Well, from our poll in Florida, it looks like people generally support any number of these measures, including overwhelming support for background checks, support for stricter gun laws in general. We even had, Florida is generally a gun favorable state, and we had majority support for a ban on assault weapons.
When was the polling done?
Over the weekend. So this is very, very recent.
Very, very recent, also fresh on the minds, Parkland, Florida, right there. Could that have impacted the polling?
Oh, certainly. The truth of the matter is that any poll is, fundamentally a snapshot in time. And so, without a doubt, especially here in Florida, the tragedy of Parkland is very much on people's minds. So certainly that probably made people focus on some of these solutions more than they might typically do. With that said, Florida has historically been a state that has moved towards, reduction of restrictions on gun ownership over the, past 10 years or so. So it's actually kind of, even in light of the events, kind of surprising to see, 70% in our poll, supporting assault rifle bans, or 87% supporting universal background checks, or you know, 78% support raising the age to 21 that you can purchase a gun. I mean, that's not the Florida that we've seen over the last 10 years, certainly.
How do you think the Parkland students are impacting those polling numbers and the stories? It seems like they're connecting with people across the nation.
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of the story, and the effectiveness of some of those students to speak out on behalf of their fellow students that didn't survive the shooting. It's been all over the media and in a lot of ways. These students, you know, have been able to do something that you know, adults haven't, which is to communicate, not to be afraid to communicate how they feel about these issues and what they believe the solutions are. In some ways, that's the heart of democracy, right? That's what we expect in a democracy, is people to speak on issues. And I think those students, whether you agree with them or not, you have to sort of respect their commitment to speak on what they believe is important.
And Dick's Sporting Goods CEO, Edward Stack, said in his comments yesterday that the company felt compelled to do something, that they had to do something in response to Parkland. Are lawmakers in Florida feeling a similar way, or not so much?
Well, you know, I mean, what is clear is the conversation has changed in Florida, which is, I mean, if you're familiar with generally the way that the gun control discussion goes in Florida, it's kind of remarkable, because typically at the start of the legislative session, we spend a lot of time talking about laws that will increase access to firearms, including, you know, allowing people to openly carry or allowing them to carry on college campuses or those kinds of, or, you know, we, of course, were the home of the mobile castle doctrine, which allows people to use weapons in self-defense even outside their home. You know, so, you know, the trend line in Florida has been generally to loosen regulations and allow better access to firearms. And yet, you know, the conversation last, you know, since Parkland has been about what are, you know, some common sense things that we can do. And the governor, you know, Governor Scott, who has an A-plus rating with the NRA, has been talking about proposals to reduce gun violence. And so, you know, I have no idea if any of this stuff will pass in the Florida legislature. Based on their history, I kind of wonder what actually could actually get through. But there's no doubt there has been a sea change in the nature of the conversation, without a doubt.
Talking to Kevin Wagner, a political science professor at Florida Atlantic University. He's a research fellow as well at the university's Business and Economics Polling Initiative. Want to get your thoughts on the move by Dick's Sporting Goods. On this decision to stop selling assault-style firearms, what do you make of it? How about refusing to sell guns to people younger than 21? 800-642-1234. Are you avoiding companies that do business with the NRA? Or do you go out of your way to support such companies? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Kevin, a number of companies that offer discounts to NRA members are doing away with that policy. We've heard of Delta Airlines, Avis and Budget, Symantec, just to name a few. The NRA criticized those companies for what it called a shameful display of political and civic cowardice. What kind of impact are these severed ties going to have on the NRA?
Yeah, a little early to really know that. You know, most of these companies probably see the same polls like the one we ran in Florida, but our numbers are consistent with national polls that, you know, say overwhelming numbers of Americans, you know, support things like universal background checks and restricting access to firearms, you know, for people like that are criminals or that have mental disorders. And so the you know, I mean, while it seems brave, you know, for some of these corporate actions, in a lot of ways it's just, you know, it's common sense in a sense, because, you know, overwhelming number of your customers generally support these kinds of things. You know, there is sort of an interesting narrative here too, which is that that corporate America is doing, you know, is following public opinion a little bit better than elected representatives are, and that is actually an interesting sort of political science-y kind of question, which is why would a corporation, you know, be more susceptible to public opinion than is a state legislature or Congress? And that's an interesting question that's probably worth exploring a little more than we do.
Yeah, the political scientists should dig in. Do you suppose anything may happen to these companies that break away from the NRA? Might there be backlash?
Well, we've already seen some backlash. I think in Georgia, we had the legislature, and I believe the lieutenant governor actually suggested they were going to remove tax breaks from Delta, or voted to remove tax breaks from Delta because of Delta's position and no longer giving an NRA discount. You know, the problem for these companies is that there's probably some backlash either way. If they continue to have policies that the NRA likes or that discounts for the NRA, they're likely to be subject to a hashtag and a boycott. And if they remove it, then they get the other backlash. I guess their calculation has to be which is the worst backlash, though.
Florida Atlantic University political science professor Kevin Wagner is with us. He's a research fellow at the university's Business and Economics Polling Initiative. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you avoiding companies that do business with the NRA, or is it the reverse? Let's talk about it after this news. A spokesperson for the NRA told CNN that President Trump's televised meeting yesterday with lawmakers on gun control made for great TV, but the group was not entertained by the president's apparent sharp turn on policy. We're talking about it this hour of the morning show. During the meeting, the president insisted that he is a fan of the NRA, but he criticized Republicans for being afraid of the gun lobby, and he expressed openness to measures that the NRA and some Republicans oppose, including raising the age limit to buy firearms to 21 from 18. Kevin Wagner is with us for this. He's a political science professor at Florida Atlantic University. You can jump in with your thoughts on the conversation at 800-642-1234. Let's first go to Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First, I just want to say that I was never an NRA supporter, but I did join this weekend because of that CNN debacle that was on last week. But my comment really is about what I found funny about this whole conversation with Dick is something that the left seemed to have found. They seem they're okay with discrimination as long as they agree with the cause. So here you have 18 to 21-year-olds who, by law, can buy certain weapons, and now you have a corporation saying, we are not going to sell this legal product to these legal people. Suddenly discrimination is okay, and the left is celebrating it. Additionally, Dix released a memo that is actively asking our lawmakers to change the law. So they're using their First Amendment rights as a corporation and using in-kind contributions by the media to promote that to influence our legislative process. I find fascinating the left is now embracing this concept and is against the Citizens United.
Steve, thanks for the observation. Let's get Kevin to respond.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to think about it. Certainly, any corporation or business is free to make decisions about how they sell things. I guess you could see it as a form of discrimination from 18 to 21, especially since the government has enacted. So I think that's an interesting kind of observation.
What are the legal ramifications here, if any, do you see?
Could somebody sue over it? You probably need a sharper legal mind than mine to figure out, because of course, a corporation has the right to set its terms of sale, but of course, they can't violate law. So you could argue age discrimination, maybe. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't have a good answer for you.
Let's go to Carlton now in Blue Mounds. Good morning, Carlton.
Good morning, and thank you very much for taking my call. First, I'd like to say that I am a Republican and I support the NRA. I am a far-right Republican. I make Rush Limbaugh look like Barney Frank. I'm also a serviceman, a veteran, and I never really did understand the need to put military assault rifles available to the public. Secondly, I never really understood why there has to be a 15 to 20 to 30 round magazines. You don't need that for civilian use. But I'm also disturbed at the politically correct position these companies are taking by pulling out of the NRA. It was fine a week ago or 2 weeks ago before this incident happened. Now all of a sudden it's taboo. That concerns me. I also believe we are living in a time of the beginning of the decline of the American empire. We're seeing the American family fall apart. We're seeing just terrible things happen in this country, and no one seems to be able to put their fingers on it.
Carlton, thank you so much. Carlton is one of 5 million members of the NRA. Kevin?
Yeah, there was a lot in that. His general support for the idea of removing military weapons from the street, but his concern about corporate activism, there's a lot to unpack there. I think that one of the interesting things about the gun debate is that many members of the NRA do tend to support things like universal background checks or the reduction of the magazine size or even the elimination of certain types of weapons. So, and that's often missed in a lot of the media coverage, that the NRA membership is not monolithic on those issues. Corporate activism, I think, is kind of an interesting kind of question that probably deserves more discussion than we give it. And what role should corporations play in our political discourse? And there is some truth to what your previous caller said and your current caller was looking at, which is it okay when the corporations support the position we like, or we don't like it when we think they should be silent when they don't support our position? That's certainly worth a conversation worth having, because corporations, whether we like it or not, are big players in our politics and our economics, and increasingly so in our politics. And that's probably something worth talking about.
Carlton, thanks so much. Yeah, thanks very much for raising the issue. During a meeting with lawmakers yesterday, President Trump had some choice words for Republicans, suggesting authorities skirt due process and to seize guns from people who pose a public safety risk. He also accused the GOP of being afraid to stand up to the NRA, and he signaled out Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey because a bill he introduced in 2013 didn't address raising the minimum age by certain weapons.
You can't buy a handgun at 18, 19, or 20. You have to wait till you're 21, but you can buy the gun, the weapon used in this horrible shooting at 18. You are going to decide. The people in this room pretty much are going to decide.
How much support is there in Congress for raising that minimum age to 21?
Yeah, really hard to know. The way I used to think about it before Parkland was to look at how the proposals went after the Sandy Hook and the massacre in Newtown, and the conventional wisdom after that was that if that tragedy, that which is just so horrific, couldn't move Congress to pass even improvements to background checks, that it's hard to imagine what would. Interestingly, though, it does seem like the conversation has shifted a bit, this seems like there's a possibility that something could get passed. Maybe not enough for people that want, huge changes, and maybe too much for people that want no changes. But it does seem like there's a window of opportunity here. And I think part of it might be, and it goes back to the clip that you just played, it's easier for a president like Mr. Trump, who's had a lot of support from the gun lobby and from the NRA, to take positions like he took, with some degree of still support from gun rights supporters, because they believe that he is a Second Amendment defender. Consider this: if Barack Obama had made a very similar statement, or a statement suggesting that he's going to go take the guns and then do due process, the response would have been entirely different. There's that old story about only Nixon could go to China, and maybe only a Republican president with support from the NRA and from gun owners could actually make these kinds of proposals and actually make them stick.
Well, do you see something there then with President Trump saying that Toomey and other Republicans are afraid of the NRA? Is there something inside of that statement that we can glean from that?
Yeah, well, the puzzle goes something like this. If 80 to 90% of Americans support certain proposals, why haven't they passed? And, one of the answers is that the members of Congress are afraid of the gun lobby, or are afraid of the backlash that they'll get in their districts from gun owners. And that seems to be a fairly, well-known and understood kind of notion to our politics. Some of it has to do with the way we gerrymander our districts, so that, a lot of districts tend to be super liberal or super conservative, and makes members of Congress a little less likely to want to step out on a ledge a little bit and with proposals. And so the president is probably quite right in that sense. But he also has the power, the president does, to give cover to some of these legislators because of his, support for the NRA if he wanted to move it. But, with the president, one of the things you have to watch is, he'll say things like, when he cut a deal with Chuck and Nancy on immigration, and then he didn't, and you know, he'll say some things, you know, publicly, but, you know, if you saw by his tweet this morning, it almost sounds like he's backing off of it a little bit. So it's kind of hard to know where he is. I mean, one Democrat suggested that it's like negotiating with Jell-O, and maybe that's slightly unfair to the president, but it does reflect the idea that the president doesn't necessarily stand behind all of the things that he says.
Let's go to Jim now in Minocqua with some observations. Jim, go ahead.
Hi. I've been a hunter for over 50 years and at one time belonged to the NRA. And about 15 years ago, NRA turned from representing hunters and normal sportsmen to the gun manufacturers. And it's very disheartening to me to see the NRA do that, but they've been doing it now for some time. And the gun manufacturers who support the NRA give to our politicians, like you mentioned earlier in your newscast, and our governor's basically been a significant recipient of that. The last thing I'd like to say is NR-15s don't belong out in the public. They're killing machines. They're not made for hunting. People that hunt with them are incapable of taking an animal down with one or two shots, and anybody that says that they need to have an AR-15 to go hunting with is probably somebody who should.
Jim, thank you so much, and you're breaking up a bit, so we're going to have to let you go there. But let's talk a moment about background checks. Senate Democrats sent a letter to President Trump this week calling for stricter background checks. They want a background check for every gun purchase, including for firearms sold at gun shows and on the Internet. Here's Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota on Tuesday.
States that have those kind of background checks, 38% less women get killed from domestic violence homicides, much less suicides in those states that have them. So that is very important, not just for these massacres, but also for that everyday violence.
She also added that more women have been killed by their partner in a 10-year span than U.S. troops killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Do you see expanded background checks in your crystal ball, if not universal, going anywhere?
Yeah, you know, that seems like one of the proposals that actually seems like it might get through. I mean, there's a couple of things. There's a proposal now to fix the current background check, and what they're really talking about is making sure that more information gets through. If you remember in the Texas shooting, there was concern about whether the record from the armed forces that the shooter had didn't make it into the background check. So there's those kinds of more basic fixes. That seems very likely to get bipartisan support. The bigger kind of question is a universal background check that covers every type of gun transaction, even private gun transactions that are not done on public property. And that seems like a harder push. You're going to get some serious opposition from members of the Senate and the House who don't want to push it that far. And the chances of that seem a little less certain.
Florida Atlantic University political scientist Kevin Wagner stays with us. You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Kevin, there was this interesting question posed online that I lifted straight out. And the person who wrote this opinion piece said, are we on a path to creating separate financial systems for Democrats and Republicans as they were responding there to Dick's Sporting Goods and these companies taking stances? Is that too far-fetched?
I don't know if I'd say it's too far-fetched. We are seeing a pattern of companies becoming more involved in the political discourse. And, you know, one that probably stands out that you're probably not thinking about right now, but, of course, is the issue about health care and contraceptives that came up with the Hobby Lobby case. And, of course, you know, Citizens United about free speech for corporate and artificial constructs that we create, you know, whether they have those rights. And so you are seeing that, and you know, when Hobby Lobby came out, you saw a lot of more liberal people suggesting, well, you know, in light of that, you know, maybe we shouldn't go to Hobby Lobby. And of course, now you're seeing a conservative backlash against companies like Delta. So, you know, you're certainly seeing elements of that. But, you know, the one thing to always keep in mind is that, you know, while partisanship seems to be sort of leaking into almost, you know, nonpartisan areas of our life, and that's certainly true, for a good number of Americans, these issues, you know, are not the forefront of their lives. They don't spend as much time following politics as perhaps you and I do, or even the listeners here do. And in that sense, they probably don't even know, you know, when they go into a Hobby Lobby or they pick Delta what their political positions are. So we might be overplaying it a little bit.
Kevin, you're in dangerous waters. Don't mess with Wisconsin listeners on politics now. Don't go there.
Yeah, well, certainly not.
Let's go to Joe now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I was mugged at gunpoint almost 40 years ago when I was living in Washington, D.C. 1234 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest. It's an easy number to remember. In any case, I was mugged. The kid couldn't have been more than maybe 11 or 12 years old. He was using a handgun. At that time, the NRA's national headquarters were also in Massachusetts Avenue, about three or four blocks away. And I recall at the time, because fortunately it's the only time I've ever been held, you know, mugged in my life. I hope it doesn't ever happen again. But at that time, the organization had in very, very large letters on their building half of the Second Amendment, that is, citizens' right to bear arms shall not be infringed. But they failed, and they still fail, to put the other half of that amendment. But anyway, the other half, of course, says in order to maintain state militias. And, of course, at that time also, and this is a long time, fairly long time ago, it was the only major organization, because I looked into this, in Washington, in the Capitol, that had metal detectors when you entered the building. And clearly, they were anxious for whatever reasons of people coming in with arms. And the whole idea, I think, of the Second Amendment is absurd. It was established, as everybody knows, in the 1780s when the Constitution was being, you know, established, when the U.S. had no standing army. Now it has the largest in the history of the world. And at that time, it was, you know, to establish something like Switzerland having, like, Minutemen so that there would be, if there was an invasion. And that was the purpose of the amendment. And I think the NRA is a very dishonest organization. I mean, at one time, as everybody knows, they were, the only function they had was to help people use arms, guns safely.
Safely. Mm. Kevin, thank you so much for bringing that history and your observations there. I want to get Kevin to respond.
Yeah, that could be a conversation we could have for an hour. There is a historical legal debate over what the meaning of the Second Amendment was when it was passed. And the debate, to try and keep it relatively short, because I know we don't have time for a whole hour to talk about this, but there was an argument between whether the Second Amendment spoke to an individual right or it spoke to a collective right. And where I'd slightly disagree with your callers, it was really more about oppression from the federal government and the states maintaining their own military. That was their well-regulated militia. And that was, a well-regulated militia being essential to a free state, right? So states would be able to, basically defend themselves from an oppressive federal government. Remember, we had just fought a revolutionary war against an oppressive federal government from across the sea. And so there was a big argument that what we were really talking about was states didn't want to disarm their militias in case they had to defend themselves. The Supreme Court didn't find an individual right to own a firearm until the Heller decision, which was very, very recent. So there is a pretty good historical argument to suggest that maybe our broader interpretation of the Second Amendment isn't quite right, at least the modern one isn't. But, of course, there's legal arguments on the other side as well. And if you read the Heller decision, Scalia makes a pretty good argument for an individual right as well. So it's certainly something that we've been debating, especially most recently.
In a speech a week ago at CPAC, NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre said people who are calling for tougher gun laws are part of a poisonous movement bent on the systematic destruction of our most basic freedoms in this country. A week later, we're seeing some companies cut ties with the NRA's 5 million members. Does this matter? Does this matter in politics, the economy? Let's discuss right after this news. Some support from corporations is waning for the NRA in the aftermath of the Parkland, Florida school shooting 15 days ago. Some gun control advocates have asked companies to end discounts or other perks for NRA members. We're talking about it on the morning show. The NRA responded to these actions, claiming the loss of sponsor discounts won't scare NRA members, and called the actions of such corporations a shameful display of political and civic cowardice. What are your thoughts on this? 800-642-1234. What do you want to see corporations do or not do? How do you want Congress to proceed on gun control or gun violence? Call in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kevin Wagner is here. He's a political science professor at Florida Atlantic University and a research fellow at the university's Business and Economics Polling Initiative. Let's go back to the phones now with Richard, who joins us from La Crosse. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Just wanted to echo one of your previous callers and about it was the gentleman that said he left the NRA after noticing the change in what the NRA represented. I myself have been a hunter for 30 years, gun owner for 30 years. I want to applaud Dick's and Walmart for what they did. But I want to just define a different a group that I'm a part of, which is an outdoorsman, which is much different than a gun enthusiast, collector, sportsman. The traditional outdoorsman, hunter, gatherer, does not focus on the equipment that he's using and oftentimes tries to use less technology. If, for example, there's a group of us in Wisconsin that are traditional archers using bows and arrows, and the connection that you get with hunting with a primitive type weapon is completely different than the connection that you would get from buying an assault rifle and going to the range. The two are not connected whatsoever.
Richard, do you feel like your outdoorsmen are being caught in the middle here?
We are. The NRA and the gun enthusiast and the gun show fanatics have muddied my water, so to speak, because it's not about the weapon. When you claim to be an outdoorsman or a sportsman, the technology that you're bringing out into the outdoors means absolutely nothing. So I just want to speak for those of us who have a connection with the wildlife. We do hunt, we do take animals, but we also use them, eat them, and then we also care about the environment and being clean and the importance of clean water. Fishermen are, you know, will tell you the same thing.
Richard, thank you so much for speaking up. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this goes back to what I think is an important thing to understand is that that all gun owners aren't represented by the NRA, and even the NRA's leadership doesn't represent all members of the NRA, and that there's actually a diversity of opinion on many of these issues. And you can see majorities of NRA members do support some of the things that we might, you know, that their leadership doesn't necessarily embrace, including improvements to background checks. So I think that's an important thing to understand, because sometimes I think we just, you know, put the NRA in whatever, you know, one of their leaders says. We said, well, that's all their members, and that's probably an oversimplification of complex political beliefs.
Kevin, is there any polling data on the NRA specifically?
Well, we didn't actually, in our recent, I'm sure there is, and in our recent poll, we didn't actually ask what people, whether they supported or didn't support the NRA. There is an interesting partisan divide on that, as you might suspect. We did ask a question about whether or not our governor's A-plus rating with the NRA would lead people to be more supportive or less supportive of him. And interestingly, and of course, you have to remember this, of course, is in the wake of the great tragedy in Parkland. The plurality suggested they would be less likely to support him because of that. But if you look underneath the numbers, there is a distinct partisan divide, which is Republicans tend to be a bit more favorable to the NRA, and Democrats are, you know, obviously less favorable. And this actually is kind of an interesting outcome for the NRA, which, you know, in much of its history tried to be nonpartisan. They supported both Republicans and Democrats that supported gun rights. But in more recent times, the NRA has become increasingly, you know, supportive of Republicans and not as much of Democrats. And that probably was, you know, if I can be as bold to say this to their leadership, that probably was a mistake, because it does give them very little cover should, you know, Democrats actually tend to control governments, which, you know, things move in cycles, mm-hmm. but they'll have a lot less influence there. So it is an interesting sort of political conundrum that they put themselves in.
Let's go to Sandy now in Mineral Point. Good morning, Sandy.
Hi. You know, I think these corporations are much more in touch with what their consumers and the general public wants. And I applaud them for the actions they're taking, whether they're the ones pulling out from the NRA or whether they're the ones that, you know, Dick's and Walmart saying no guns until you're 21. They're much more in touch than our Congress is, and that's because pretty much the party in power, the Republicans, are bought and sold by, you know, they're paid for by the NRA.
So Sandy feels like corporations have a pulse on what Americans want and are thinking. Kevin?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting points in what she said. And one is that corporations, you know, especially in a consumer economy, are conscious of not alienating consumers and doing things that keep consumers coming to them. So there's a reason why they actually might be even more responsive to immediate changes, because they want to make sure that they continue, their bottom line continues to work pretty well. You know, the larger statement about whether or not politicians are bought or sold from the NRA, keep in mind, you know, certainly some of it is contributions, and the gun lobby is a big donor in politics. But also keep in mind that there's a more base political consideration, which is Second Amendment supporters tend to be one-issue voters, and they tend to be high turnout voters as well. And in districts that are very, very, you know, that are gerrymandered in ways to be very liberal, very conservative, there's a big consequence for some of those legislators to cross the gun lobby or the NRA. And that's not just money. It's actual real people, real voters that vote on those issues.
Let's circle back now to legislation. House Republicans say their priority is not on more gun legislation, but they called law enforcement failures. Here's Speaker Paul Ryan on Tuesday.
In this particular case, there were a lot of breakdowns, from local law enforcement to the FBI getting tips that they didn't follow up on, to, you know, school resource officers who are trained to protect kids in these schools and who didn't do that. And that, to me, is probably the most stunning one of them all.
So Ryan touted a bill the House passed in December that proposed changes to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. It's aimed to make state and federal agencies more thorough when it comes to reporting people who are supposed to be banned from buying guns. How big a problem do we have with law enforcement failures, communication breakdowns like what we saw in Florida?
Yeah, I think that's an argument that's going to get some traction, and certainly, you know, I'm not going to, you know, unlike some of the members of the Florida in here, I'm not going to jump on and say who did what right or wrong, because I think that we're entitled to an investigation that actually takes a look at exactly what happened, and we can sort of take a look at that. But in a meta sense, in a larger picture, yeah, there's plenty of places that we could improve, including making sure these tips are taken seriously, having procedures that deal with how law enforcement is supposed to approach these things. So I think that's fair. I think the legislation that the Speaker Ryan is actually speaking about, though, included a provision for interstate reciprocity on concealed carry, and that's probably part of the reason it wasn't picked up in the Senate. You know, in politics, we might say that's a bit of a poison pill for people that would otherwise support this that may not want to. And I actually think the president mentioned that in his discussion yesterday about the concealed carry reciprocity issue.
So Florida's legislative session ends on March 9th, which is a week from tomorrow. How many of these proposals might actually be passed that you're seeing?
You know, the truth of it, you know, for especially for those of you in Wisconsin, so that's basically everybody, right? Our legislature is a part-time legislature that only meets in the spring. In fact, there's an old joke in Florida that nobody's safe while they're in session. But they're not in session after March, and unless there's a special session called. And so if they're going to pass something, they have to do it relatively quickly. You know, typically in Florida, in order for legislation to get passed, it usually starts sometimes in previous years, and you slowly move it through committees, and you push it through, and if it doesn't pass this year, you push it to next year. To introduce legislation basically at the end of a session and try and get it passed is a very, very heavy lift to do, though there is some evidence the governor is trying to push for it. I'm not terribly optimistic. You know, they still have to deal with the budget, and our legislative session is almost over. So I'm not terribly optimistic that they're going to have time to do something in this session. But, you know, this has been an atypical political year, so certainly worth watching.
And certainly at the core of the arguments there, are teachers going to be armed? And what might that legislation look like?
Yeah, well, the Governor Scott has not been supportive of that particular notion. And when we polled this in Florida, Floridians in general were not terribly supportive of that. And, of course, if you saw the recent news story in Georgia of a teacher firing a weapon in a classroom, that probably doesn't help that argument a great deal. That seems particularly unlikely to become a law in Florida anytime soon.
Angela emailed and said, glad that there are some companies cutting ties with the NRA and shows that they have values and a backbone. Angela says so much more needs to happen. No reason a club should have this much lobby power and control. It is sickening, really. Lots of great calls, great questions this hour. And as we begin to wrap up, Kevin, is the Parkland shooting going to result in changes to America's gun laws, or will this be like so many other shootings that you have tracked in the past in which lawmakers talk about change for a while but don't actually move the needle?
Yeah, that's a really good question and one that deserves probably a better answer than I'm about to give you. And the short answer is we really don't know. I mean, You know, I said earlier in the hour that you know, if something was going to move the needle, it was going to be something like Sandy Hook, you know, where you had, you know, first graders. I mean, just horrific imagery, just terrible, terrible tragedy. And it looked for a time like legislation was likely, and you saw some concessions about some lawmakers. And then, you know, a month passed, another month passed, and, you know, eventually we stopped talking about it, and it didn't happen. You know, this one, for whatever reason, feels a little different, and the polling numbers suggest that people, you know, have pretty strong beliefs about it. Some basic things that almost all of us agree on. But the history, if we're just going by history, the history suggests to us that things are not likely to move that quickly, and if they do, you're not likely to get much out of it. I mean, we could be wrong. This could be the event. Maybe it has something to do with how vocal some of the survivors of that shooting have been, and we'll certainly watch it. But
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Anytime.
Kevin Wagner is a professor of political science at Florida Atlantic University, research fellow at the university's Business and Economics Polling Initiative. This hour was produced by Bill Martins, Keely Boltina, and Naeja Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. You're listening to the Ideas Network.